Hey, Brendan.
Hello, Jorgen.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good.
I feel like we're ready to podcast.
We are ready to podcast. It's another episode, another day, another non-dollar of the episode of the
Yeah,
podcast.
there's definitely no dollars.
There's no dollars. Hint, hint. Let's kick it off. This Alexa thing.
It's creepy.
It is a little creepy. I haven't seen any. The story is that Alexa has replied to some voice commands by laughing
Or randomly laughing
or
without
random.
any command.
That's even creepier. I mean, I feel like with the state of the world, I think it would be more in tune if she was just crying occasionally, and she's also being like bossed around and told to do things all the time. So it would be more in character, I suppose.
I did hear that
When,
somebody had their Alexa read them the definition of the word please
huh?
randomly when they made a
Wow,
request.
that's pretty nice. I feel like there's a wider discussion for us to be had down the line about how all of these assistants have female names and female voices and everything. That's just like the go-to thing that they established, Siri and Alexa, and it's like they record those what that says about the male culture in Silicon Valley and how they view assistants.
That does sound like a much larger discussion.
Yeah, it's not pretty, but no, I understand that some people can be taken aback by. I don't have one of those assistants myself. I use Siri occasionally, but mainly to tell my Apple Watch to start the timer while I'm cooking. But to suddenly have a robot voice like that laughing in the background would make even the largest guy self-conscious.
I just don't feel comfortable with those things around. Like
No, I
my
don't.
girlfriend has one of the Google ones, and it's always listening. It
Yes.
hears all the stupid things I say. It hears every
Yes.
snore. It hears everything.
But they don't record or, take notice of things that you say when you're not talking directly to it. Promise.
Yeah, of course
Honestly, they
not.
don't. Of course,
Yeah.
they don't. No,
No.
no.
They
No,
don't
no,
do
no.
that, and the Best Buy Geek Squad doesn't report as informants to the FBI. Oh wait,
No.
no, that does
Oh,
happen.
wait, they do. Wait, of course we do that. We've done that all along. What's wrong with that? Yes.
Little espionage among friends.
What is a little espionage among friends? I mean, I've never used Geek Squad, and I kind of feel like the people who feel the need to use Geek Squad to have their computers and machinery set up, then maybe they don't deserve any better. And it's nice to have all those people registered in like one database. And it's okay if the FBI also is involved in that.
The only thing I like about the Geek Squad is on the television program Chuck, it took place in a knockoff of Best Buy called the Buy More, and they had instead of the Geek Squad, they had the Nerd Herd.
That's good writing. That is forking good writing, as they would say on The Good Place.
No, that's a great show.
It is. Side note, I also just read an article and found out that Silicon Valley is coming back for season 5, but Ehrlichman is out.
Yeah, he's left in China, I believe, last the
Yes.
plot had.
And I
But
thought
yeah,
that was
he's
just
left the show.
A regular episode ending, but then I read that he was kind of written out of it. And then I read an interview with him from the Hollywood Reporter from last summer, which is, I mean, I always thought he was a bit of a dick, but in this interview, he comes across as like the biggest ass in mainly in Hollywood, that's tough competition. But he just like, well, I got so many things to do right now. They can't shape the recording schedule of that show around my schedule. That's hard for them. I understand that. But that's how it is. I'm so busy now. I mean, this Emoji movie is going to blow up the world, and I'm doing things with Spielberg and la 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 la. I was like, ah, you are your character.
And then he got swept up in the Me Too scandal. So,
Yes, it turns out he had some skeletons in the closet there, and I don't know if he's going to be part of the Ready Player One as he was originally planned to be, or if they refilmed that like they did with the Christopher Plummer film.
I haven't heard about that. You know what else I haven't heard?
No.
Alan's voice. I think we
Alan?
forgot Alan.
Where is he?
Oh, hey, you guys.
There he is.
Hey, you
it's
guys.
It's alive.
Well, were we recording you on mute all this time?
Are we recording a podcast right now?
We are.
Yeah, man, we're like 5 minutes in.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Well. Thanks for kicking it off for me. I mean, we're recording, what is it, episode 224 now, I think?
Probably.
Yeah. It's
not until you told us it was.
Okay. Well, you know,
we did leave an opening for sponsors, though.
Oh, okay, good. I'm sorry I missed out on that first part, but I'm sure that topic was definitely it was a thing, right? Or not a thing?
It was not a thing.
Not a thing.
It was not a thing. Not a thing for us. we don't judge. But no judging.
Certainly not a thing. Is another thing that I found this week. I think we already knew this a little bit, but we've talked about MoviePass a lot. I am a big advocate of it. I know we talked about it on the show a couple times as, you know, this is a thing. We've been watching movies kind of a lot recently. You know, MoviePass has, I think, enabled that a lot, right? It is a pretty good deal. We weren't sure how they were going to make money, but I feel like when we talked about it, our idea was, yeah, they're going to be selling your data about that thing, right? I mean, this is something that we've talked about on numerous occasions about how when companies are offering something for free, that it's you and your data that is being sold. In this case, MoviePass is offering something that seems too good to be true from a pricing point of view, and you know, the understanding was that your data could be sold. In this case, it turns out they've essentially all but admitted that the data that's being sold is the location data about using MoviePass as an app. I think part of the conceit of MoviePass is that when you buy the ticket, you have to check in using the app when you're around the theater. And what was revealed this week was that the location checking isn't limited to necessarily when you're around the theater. It will check before that and after that, or otherwise pull that data in if it's available. And then that data can be used for marketing and sales purposes, which pretty much is a little creepy, right? I mean, when it's controversial for a number of reasons, one of which is that it was kind of vague in the privacy understanding of what MoviePass was doing with that information. And it ostensibly seemed like, oh, we're only using it to check in to make sure you're by the theater, when it turns out it is more than that. So that's part of the problem. The other part of the problem is what it's going to be used for, right? I mean, maybe they're using that for MoviePass, maybe they're using that for other things. And that's the part that I think people are getting a little up in arms about, and rightfully so. I mean, that's, you know, how much you care about your privacy, about your location data, is something that I think some people are fine with losing that information, but I think being informed about it is the thing that's most annoying to me, at least.
I'm kind of torn on it, because yes, they weren't explicit in how that data was being gathered or what data was being gathered.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's also some responsibility on the part of the consumer to, like, if I install an app on my phone, I look at what that app does. And if it's tracking all the time, you have the ability to turn that function off. So you can still opt out and get all the benefits of the service.
At least right now.
Right.
So at least on an iPhone, I'm not sure about Android, but I know on an iPhone, one of the privacy controls is you can set the location sharing information with the apps to be never while using the app or all the time. And I think by default, at least they expect it to be all the time. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to gather that information. But if it's set to while using the app, then my question is, when are you not using the app? Because I know apps can run in the background. So when is that line of demarcation there? So I don't know. I think part of it is on the consumer. And then it's really a conversation that we have to have about like what constitutes like reasonable amounts of privacy, as well as disclosure about that use of that data and privacy.
I mean, I also at the same time would still be willing to sell a chunk of my privacy to be able to see a movie every day.
And especially, I mean, I know when we talked about MoviePass initially, we were saying that the outcome is that we end up seeing more movies in theaters, which I think is a thing. So to some degree, I do support that. And I think it's a little shady how they kind of are rolling that out. But at the same time, I think that the net is kind of positive. I feel like the metadata around my location information is probably already being stolen by other things that I don't know about.
Yep.
So to some degree, I think the fact that they have admitted it at least goes to show that that kind of thing is being actively kind of sought after, right? That data is being sought after by other companies, and maybe folks will be more kind of savvy about whether that information is out there or not.
And they have admitted, I mean, up front they admitted that they were gathering data, and that was where the real money was going to come from, mm-hmm. to help fund all these tickets. And it sounds like I think it was the CEO or somebody from the company was talking about how their plan is to, by tracking where people go to the movies and how they get to the movies, that they could then partner with like local restaurants and ride sharing services and other things that are part of the movie going experience, so that they can come out of, or you know, get money from all of those parts of that. They can not just from the movies, like that's the hook, but they're really going to make their money on making these deals with all these other companies.
And you know, honestly, if they were upfront about that, I think it would be a really more interesting kind of story from that point of view of like, hey, this is what we're trying to do, and this is what we're doing, and support us in this. Don't come into this with your eyes open about it. Now, because of the way it's been rolled out, it does seem like they were trying to hide that information. But again, you know, I think the net kind of positive about it is that more people are hopefully going to movie theaters, mostly because movies are still really good. Like, I feel like I saw a lot of good movies last year. We talked about that too. Speaking of a lot of good movies, in the last year, the Oscars were just last week.
Yep, it was the first year I finally saw all of the Best Picture nominees. All of them.
Wow.
I missed one, yeah.
Was it the Post?
The Churchill one. The Churchill one.
Oh. That one was better. Darkest Hour was better than The Post.
I can see that. But I liked several of them as well. That's what doesn't always happen either.
Yeah, I think I actually didn't watch the Oscars. This is something that is a data point that I'm going to have to cataloging for that future show about cord cutting that I know that we teased like a few weeks ago. But yeah, I couldn't get my act together and I ended up not watching them. there were other extenuating circumstances, i.e., like life does get in the way. It finds a way, but it gets in the way.
I feel like Brendan and I did a good job of keeping you updated, though.
That's true.
We did.
I enjoyed the
spoiler for you.
I definitely enjoyed the text thread over that. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm not in the habit of watching shows like that, but for some reason we ended up watching this one, and it was fairly enjoyable. Although possibly I watched it on the ABC app on my Apple TV. And after 4 hours, it kicked us off. It asked, like, are you still watching? And it kind of froze the picture. I was like, ABC, you got to talk to your own technology, man. This is, you know, your program. You're planning this.
It is real long.
But I don't know. It didn't feel that as long as I'd feared it was. I did other things along the way, like laundry and things like that. But no, it was entertaining.
And the fish sex movie won.
The fish sex movie won. It's true.
And it was good.
Yeah. Were there any of the awards that you were like puzzled by or disagreed with or?
No, I actually won my Oscar pool. I got most of them right, so no.
Oh, that's interesting. But, like you did a like the Oscar ballot kind of thing, and then you had everyone fill out what they thought were going to win.
Exactly. Yeah, I had about a dozen people over, and we all made our picks, and only two of us had seen everything. We finished first and second.
Oh, nice.
So what yeah.
It's like being an informed voter means something, you know.
Right?
Who knew? But is it do you vote with your heart or your head? Like, do you vote with what you feel should win or what you think is going to win?
Interesting.
Well, I voted with my heart for the most part, which is why I got all the big categories wrong. Like, I got Best Picture wrong. I got Best Director wrong. Actually, those are the two biggest awards I got wrong, yet still won overall because I swept the technical categories and got a bunch of the other ones.
Thank you, Dunkirk. Yes. Who did you have for the two top ones?
I had Three Billboards for Best Picture and Christopher Nolan for Best Director because I voted with my heart.
You did. I would have never thought either of those were with a chance of winning. I mean, Three Billboards is one of my favorite movies from last year, but it has received some backlash.
And we've talked a little bit about how it's there's aspects of it that I think are kind of, I don't know, like it's. I feel like the Oscars tend to be. I don't want to say safe choices, but safe choices, right? Ones that that people watch and can go like, oh yes, there's not. I wouldn't say like completely mass appeal, but there's certainly more of an aspect of, you know, like a not even necessarily uplifting, but more just like it's you come away with it with a generally more positive attitude. Whereas I feel like I enjoyed. Three Billboards, but I did not feel good after watching that movie.
No.
No. I don't think any of them feel good.
Yeah.
It's missing the last 10 minutes. It ends right before those last 10 minutes where everything came together. It's like they lost the last five set pages of the script and no one ever figured it out.
I did get lucky on a Best Documentary Feature because the one I picked was the one that won. It was the only one I saw. Because it was available on Netflix. Icarus?
Yeah.
The one about the Russian doping program?
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Which is a great doc. I mean, clearly it's a great documentary. It won Best Documentary.
I feel that the documentary category at the Oscars is something that for years has actually delivered really interesting winners. I mean, last year, I think it was the year before, it was the OJ one. Which is a fantastic documentary, even if it is five episodes of 2 hours each. So movie is borderline.
And of course, The Boss Baby did not win for Best Animated Feature, which that just tells you how few movies are made that are animated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That got nominated.
Yes.
Yeah. Golly. I feel like that that flexes around a little bit too, the animated features kind of aspect of it, and I think that you're right. I think that could be a bigger fight, and I feel like it has been in the past. But
well, it used to be less. There used to be less nominees, so you would something more interesting. And now they've expanded it to something like five nominees now, when it used to be, I think, three.
Right.
Yeah.
And same thing with Best Picture. I mean, they get a lot of Best Picture nominees.
Yeah.
Eight. It's bananas. Can we also just give a shout out to what's his name, Robert Lopez, who's now like more than double EGOT for what it is. He's got
is he
like
a double EGOT.
He's got at least two, and of two of them, he has three. It's absolutely bananas. And he wrote Book of Mormon together with the South Park guys.
Wow.
Oh, that's interesting.
He's done well for himself.
Yeah.
He's 39 years old, so, you know, makes me feel great about what I've done in life.
I know I didn't pick Guillermo del Toro for best director on my ballot, but I'm glad that he won, because in 2013, Alfonso Cuarón won, and he's the first Mexican director to win.
Mm-hmm. And since
then Iñárritu won, and now Del Toro's won. So out of the last 5 years, we've had three Mexican best directors, and they're all best friends.
Right.
Like, yeah. They're going with three amigos. Like, that's awesome. What type of parties must they have where you go hang out with your friends? It's like, oh yeah, we're all Oscar winners. We were Oscar winners. And we share the same cinematographer in a bunch of movies.
Yeah.
What was the 2013 winner again? Movie?
Gravity.
Gravity, yeah.
Which was good, but I'm actually still a little like, I don't know about that one. But again, same kind of thing, right? It very uplifting that year. I'm trying to think what else was up that year, because I do remember thinking, really, Gravity? But
technically it was a well-made movie.
Yeah.
True.
I enjoyed it. I know there were a lot of people who didn't.
I mean,
but I still see it as the gimme win for him not winning for Children of Men.
Fair. Children of Men.
He should have won for that.
He really should have won.
A better movie, I think. Yeah. What's he up to these days?
He's been working on a movie that is set in Mexico. It's a period piece in the 70s about like a middle-class family. I think it's called Roma. But he takes forever to make movies. I mean, he did Children of Men in 2006, and then I don't think he did his next movie was Gravity in 2013.
What?
And then now he's been working on this since 2016.
So it'll be out in around 2023.
I think it's supposed to come out this year, so that's actually a pretty quick turnaround for him. But still, that's a long time.
It's like Terrence Malick, who made three movies in his first 30 years, and since then he's made like a movie every 2 years. But of worse and worse results.
Oh no. Oh, very fun. Well, because I didn't watch the Oscars, I do have one kind of question for the two of you. Were there any like, what is the must-see thing I need to find a clip of?
Was
the opening?
The opening monologue is okay, but I think my favorite part was when the two African American ladies came in, and I'm so jet lagged now. My name database is shut down, but it's Paul Thomas Anderson's girlfriend, wife, and another one. They came in and presented an award, and their little 3-minute shtick was awesome. What's her name? She was from Saturday Night Live. Maya Rudolph. Yes.
Wait, she's married to Paul Thomas Anderson?
That's right.
What?
What?
He went from Fiona Apple to Maya Rudolph.
Bravo.
Which I think is that must be like quite a challenge. That's quite a difference. But yeah, I think they seem like a hilarious couple.
I like that. I like that he's writing a movie with his kid.
Yes, that was also very promising. He had to walk away for it from a while because he got too negative, but he was back at it again now. That's nice. No, but I think that their little presentation thing was kind of nice. The opening monologue is okay. The recurring humor about the speed ski.
Frances McDormand's speech was pretty good.
Ooh, goosebumps.
That was yeah, awesome. I saw that one. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Cool. Well, I will see if I can pick some of that up. I've been, it's been, and I'll save it for when we do kind of the more cord cutty kind of episode, but it is interesting seeing stuff kind of late in that respect. I just remarked this to someone else because we had both read an article about reading articles online and instead not reading them online, but reading them in print only. And it one of the things that it does is it kind of forces you to look at things from a little more distance, so you're potentially less reactive to it in the moment, which I find is something that kind of tamps down the kind of automatic kind of emotional response in a lot of things. And I think that, that helps with kind of the reduction of kind of just automatic rage culture that comes out of things.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it could also, that cuts both ways. I think an example of that I had was when I read an article about Dan Harmon's apology.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For his misconduct on when he's working on Community.
Mm-hmm.
And then to actually listen to the podcast with hearing him say the words was a very different experience.
Interesting. Well, you get a lot more tone and inflection out of something that's versus a transcript. So that's that is interesting too. Hmm.
What was he apologizing for?
Essentially screwing up Community.
Well, yeah, he had an inappropriate interest in one of his staff writers, and he didn't handle it well. And she called him out about it recently, and he pretty much had a full apology, and she accepted it. And I was like, this is how you apologize.
Hmm.
Which, as a person who listens to his podcast, he has since gone on to continue to joke about how good he is at apologies, which is really funny, but at the same time, like, is it undercutting it a little bit?
Yes.
Possibly a little. Possibly a little.
There was a whole episode after that where he just kept apologizing to everybody. I'm sorry. Starting everything with, I'm sorry.
That's funny. But yeah.
He's an interesting and very weird man.
Yes.
I don't often promote other podcasts on our podcast, but Harmontown.
But if you were to listen to other podcasts, then that one's not half bad.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we do only have 223 other ones of this podcast. So in all of the hours of the day, if you have spare hours that you're not listening to our podcast, that one's not a bad one to listen to.
Yeah.
Or maybe. Go back and start on this one from scratch, because you probably forgot what the first episode was about.
We forgot what the first episode... Actually, no, we didn't. It was about Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah.
That was our first episode. That's how we always can remember that we started in 2012.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
Old.
Interesting. I want to say we had a couple other topics to talk about. I don't know if we're going to get to them at this point, but one of the ones that I know that kind of coming back into a movie vein was one that I know Brendan, you and I saw independently in the last few weeks, which was Annihilation. And I didn't know this. Actually, I didn't know a bunch of stuff about this movie. But one of the things I didn't know was that it's based on a book, which when they were writing the movie, it was there was only one book, and now there are three books. And interestingly, one of the extra things about this movie was that when it was written independent of those other two sequels. And so it has, kind of a life of its own, I think, the way that it was the way that it was created. This also leads to some consternation about how the movie ended up being distributed, because in the United States, Annihilation made it to theaters, but because of, you know, executive pressure and, you know, actions between the, was it the director and an executive? It ended up being like, no, we're not, or I think it was producer. They're like, no, we're not going to distribute this into theaters outside of the United States. So it's being picked up by Netflix, of all things, outside of the United States.
Huh.
But the short form on the movie is, wow, I did not expect that. the trailers make it look kind of like an interesting sci-fi, very kind of magical, surreal reality kind of sci-fi movie. And there's like an element of, this is not a good thing. And I think that is a very good kind of spoiler-free summary of it. The word that I would use to describe the movie is unexpected. Because I sat down, you know, sort of expecting kind of a few different beats about the movie, and I was like wrong on many fronts. And I think I enjoyed it for that reason. I can see people not enjoying it for that reason, though. So I wanted to see your take on it.
I liked it. I don't understand it. And part of why I like it, it doesn't spoon feed you much.
No.
Like, there's a lot that's left open-ended. There's a lot that isn't explained. There's a lot that doesn't make sense. I think it
kind of
makes sense.
This is just like Mother, Brendan. This is just like Mother.
Another movie that I probably have to see.
Which was nominated for some Razzies.
Which infuriates me.
But it was... I felt very uncomfortable during the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
I felt uncomfortable when I left the theater. I had a headache and a knot in my stomach. And I did not sleep well. And I kept thinking about the movie for the next 2 days. And I think that makes it good.
You know, I agree with you. I absolutely do. And I think that's, you know, there's something about being challenged when you're watching a movie that, or any form of entertainment, that I think is good from time to time, right? You shouldn't be completely coddled by absolutely everything. I also really feel this about music. This is something that I feel pretty strongly about because recently we switched from listening primarily to Pandora to kind of more listening to Spotify. There's the subtle difference that the big difference that comes out from that is that in Spotify, you can pick a specific song you want to hear and listen to it pretty much, you know, out of nowhere. With Pandora, you kind of can't do that. And so from one point of view, it kind of keeps it more off balance about how it sounds. At the same time, if I really listen to the playlist for both, they're pretty much the same. So it's not, I don't think it's really that challenging, but I do think that there is an aspect of that for movies that is good. I think, you know, you shouldn't walk into every movie knowing exactly what's going to happen. That's fine for certain movies. I mean, there's definitely movies we've walked into where it's like, yep, I know this is going to happen and I know this is going to happen. And the journey is more interesting than the result.
It definitely, I think I can safely say that he now has a style, but it felt like an Alex Garland movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like there were elements that I saw, like imagery that he used and plot devices and storytelling methods that I've seen in the other movies that he's written,
mm-hmm.
not just directed, but because he's written, like he wrote Sunshine, he wrote 28 Days Later.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. The Beach. Ex Machina, of course, he directed. Apparently, he directed a large portion of Dread.
Wow.
And he wasn't just the writer. He didn't get credit, but he actually directed most of it.
Huh.
which makes so much more sense now. But he has a style, and it's one that resonates with me. I like it a lot. It's not, none of it's easy.
Yeah.
There's always at least one moment in all of his movies where my brain goes, what am I seeing right now? I know why. What? And that's good. For an industry that churns out, you know, a new Liam Neeson movie every year where he goes somebody up, where I don't have to think at all and everything is like, no, I don't want any more. It's like, no, we're going to shove the spoon in your mouth. It's nice to be challenged.
Yeah. I will go into one movie piece of it, which I don't think spoils anything, but is very interesting. And that is, it's something that you should watch for if you go see this movie. The one thing that I would point out that I think, again, doesn't spoil anything is there's a tattoo that appears in the movie. And it's not always there on the people that are in the movie.
How is this not a spoiler?
I don't think it's a spoiler because it doesn't...
Does it say time's up, but no apostrophe between the E and the S?
I think it's an interesting thing to watch for without necessarily giving away what is going on, because they also don't explain it. That's one of those things that they don't explain in the movie. It is specifically referenced just once, and I think that's... I think it's an interesting thing to that's there, and I was thinking about that a lot, especially, you know, like you said, like there was a very... there was like a period of incubation for me to think about it. Like I couldn't talk about it right away. I was like, I need to kind of process this for a little while and let it kind of sit around and really screw me up for like a day. I like that. The other thing that is, you know, that spoils stuff. I won't say that.
Yeah, I wouldn't say anything about the movie other than it is visually impressive, the acting is interesting, mm-hmm. and it's not a story that you've seen before.
Right.
And yet it is a story you've seen before. But it's also original.
Yeah.
So go see it. Go see it while you can.
Definitely
in the theater.
Yeah.
Because there's a large portion of the world that's not going to get to see it in the theater, and they'll just watch on Netflix, and it won't be as impressive.
No, I agreed with you. I mean, we talked about this just before I saw it, which was go see it in a theater because, you know, again, that theater experience really brings that movie, you know, brings a lot to that movie. I think another movie that was required in the theater is... another movie that I think we all did see. We all saw Black Panther, yes?
Yep.
Along with many, many others.
I saw it twice.
Me too. yeah, I mean, we ended up holding this one for the show so we could have all of us, you know, having seen it. Are we going to talk about it at all? It's a thing.
Oh, it is. It is most definitely a thing.
I've been listening to the score by Ludwig Göransson on repeat for the last, I don't know, 2-3 days.
Oh, interesting.
It's got great music.
Because they really were pumping the Kendrick Lamar like soundtrack.
Oh, I bought that too. I was not a fan.
Yeah, I
there's a bunch of stuff on it that's not in the movie.
There are a couple songs that are good, but I'm not... I wasn't super excited about the whole album. Interesting that I should listen to the score. That's a good point. But from a almost every other angle for the movie, it's like, wow, so much stuff. So much. Just really... And especially... and I think the unexpected kind of term comes out as well, because I think we've all discussed it with you know, the Marvel movies. They do have a rhythm to them. They do have kind of a, like an up and a down, and this is how it's going to go. And you kind of watch it knowing that is going to go that way. And I think there is some amount of predictability in the movie, and yet it was still really, really enjoyable. I don't know. I loved it.
I have a question for the two of you.
Yeah.
Killmonger, great Marvel villain or greatest Marvel villain?
Well, I haven't seen all of the Marvel movies, so I'm going to have to limit it to great. But it is he's a very, very good villain. And I mean this with all, how to put this, with all of the baggage and expectations and like what this movie had been built up to in advance, it had an insane pressure put upon it, and for it to deliver on all of that pressure and please pretty much everyone except the Pepe the Frog guys and deliver on like quality and the amount of people who go to see it and how it's being spread out in pop culture apart from that, and how like people are, African Americans are dressing up in like African outfits to go see it, called traditional outfits, and it's like it's delivered on so many points that it is, I think it's an absolute magnificent feat by the people behind it, and they can be very proud. And it's I thought that when Wonder Woman came out last year, it was sort of a superhero movie that reached beyond the superhero Marvel universe and did something for women. And I think that, which was about damn time. But I think Black Panther has kind of built on that and eclipsed it and gone way beyond in what it has done for another group that is not men and white in the way that most superhero movies are.
Yeah, I really enjoyed his performance. It was, I think, it has a lot to do with, like just the real stuff that came out of it. I mean, there's one scene where he's like, you know, can you believe it, Leno? Just a kid from Oakland thinking that he can, you know, be, you know, do more than that or dream bigger than that. And it's like, oh yeah. Wow, that is a really and it was interesting how much Oakland, California was specifically kind of referenced in the movie.
Well, that's where Ryan Coogler is from, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Funnest thing I found on the internet today. Stay with me. It's related, but it's a little bit of a long story to explain it. But a 17-year-old girl found out that her orthodontist had posted a story of her on his own Twitter feed. Okay. And he freaked out in a joyful way because she had gone to see in Black Panther, and then while watching Michael B. Jordan take his shirt off, she had bit her teeth so hard that her braces snapped and they're metal. So her orthodontist was all like, oh my God, I can't believe this patient I had today, blah, 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 you know, snapped it watching Killmonger and blah, blah, blah. And so she found that and she spread it and she's like, well, this is me. He's talking about me. I'm that girl. The internet is crazy town. And so then the internet naturally loved this. So they started spreading it. And then she's like, oh, now I've gone viral. And now everyone knows that I love Michael B. Jordan and that I actually, you know, snapped my metal braces when he took his shirt off. And so Michael B. Jordan saw that and he liked it. And then he was like, I'm so sorry I did that to you. Let me at least pay for your new braces. I can't believe that website is free.
that is great. I do hope that it's not a kind of a token thing. I really do hope that there's more that kind of comes out of it. I think one of the things I really liked about this, and I have to look up the website that was related, was that there was a website that was related. And I want to say it's the Black Panther Challenge, but I'm not 100% sure. But what that website was talking about, it was primarily to get people to essentially buy tickets for underprivileged kids to go see Black Panther.
Yes.
That was part of it. And then the other part of it was it had information about Afrofuturism as a genre of entertainment.
Interesting.
which was like I learned a bunch of stuff about that, and that it's, you know, it's like essentially imagining sci-fi if essentially black people were cool. And it's like, wait, that people don't think that? Like, people don't have, they don't have examples of that. And that's yeah. I think that's a shame, and B, one of the things that really comes out about, or, you know, the power of entertainment, having that kind yeah. of like, oh, I can have some representation, I can see me and, you know, have kind of empathy with a character, is super duper powerful. I mean, like when Rogue One came out, right? And the I already forgot his character's name. It's already fallen out of my head. But having a character with a very kind of strong accent and a mostly non-white male cast was like groundbreaking, right? And having that kind of like, oh, look, that looks like me. I can now kind of think of myself in the world as more than just kind of me. I can think of myself as like this person, or have that kind of extra experience, I think is super duper interesting and necessary, and something that really should be more celebrated. So
yeah.
Having said that, I think Andy Serkis needs some props for his performance yes. in that movie. That was insane.
Yeah,
that was. I've always thought of him as a bit of a round guy, but he was buff in this one. He was and a very, very fascinating character.
Yeah,
the whole cast, though, from top to bottom, like everybody was a knockout.
Yeah,
and Serkis and Freeman being the only, basically the only two white actors there, the two Tolkien white guys, right?
It's a good pun.
I don't think I've heard a joke more than that joke in the last month.
It's a solid
it's
pun.
So good. Yeah. Whoever thought of that first should get an Oscar for something.
Do they give Oscars for that? For puns?
Should.
That should definitely be a thing.
That should be a thing.
And I had watched about 2 weeks before Black Panther came out. I finally watched Creed.
Oh yeah.
Which I had it's on my list. It's on my list.
It almost felt like watching Black Panther after that movie. It felt like, okay, Creed was a practice run for this movie.
Right.
Like, there's so many elements, because it's got Michael B. Jordan, it's got Ludwig Göransson scoring it, it's got Coogler, and it's that team working together. And you see in his performance between those two movies how things kind of carry over. It just felt like this excellent practice run to make Black Panther just knock it out of the park.
Hmm. Has anyone seen Fruitvale Station?
I haven't. I didn't want to get bummed out because I knew it was just going to bum me out.
I think that's what that does. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw the news. I didn't want to watch the movie.
Right.
I saw the actual video of the man dying. I don't know.
Yeah.
Oscar Grant.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's definitely that's certainly one that's on my list, but I'm not sure. Yeah, that needs a watch, I think, especially in kind of a just because there is so much crossover between that and Creed and Black Panther. I think to kind of get that body of work, I think would be really interesting. Did you either of you see the GQ video that was made that has Ryan Coogler drawing on like the breakdown of the fight scene in the casino?
No.
Oh, we're gonna share that one. That one's really, really worth seeing. it just shows from, I think, in a very quick, I mean, it's less than 10 minutes, just the amount of kind of A, attention to detail, and B, just pure fanaticism that comes from directing a movie. It's a really nice, just kind of like, wow, this is the amount of thought and effort that goes into making a scene as interesting as that one. So I think that will link. I want to say they've done at least one more, and it was from Thor Ragnarok, which I'm not sure if it needed it at the same kind of level, but it was still fun to watch. I like that they, it's a masterclass in seeing something cool being made. It's something to watch. So we'll link that.
So I got a question for you, you gentlemen who watch all of the Marvel movies. Do you think that this one changes the landscape and the level of expectations a little bit now? Because I feel like all of the, and again, I haven't seen them all, so, but I feel like the Marvel universe has gotten into a rhythm of, here's our formula for what a movie is, and at this minute there's a fight, and then there's some conversation, and then there's a fight and some conversation. And the jokes have gotten better, and they've gotten better and better directors on them, and they interrelate them all to each other, and la-di-da's. But I feel like this one is the first one with a much deeper political, cultural message, and that it's kind of, my impression is that it's kind of changed the playing field a little bit and upped the ante. Do you, knowing the universe better, do you guys feel that way? And are you excited to see how and if Marvel replies to that with their other work?
Go ahead.
I have full faith in Kevin Feige at this point as the mastermind behind all the Marvel universe. I think this definitely proved that there's still other stories to tell within the format and to break the format. I think between this and Thor Ragnarok are pushing in two very different directions, but still excelling. And a lot of the contracts are coming to an end. So the people that we've gotten used to over the last 10 years seeing play our superheroes are going to be going away. So they're going to have a clean slate to build. Like, they could build Black Panther as the Iron Man of the next 10 years, the person who weaves throughout all the movies. Like, there's a lot of really good potential.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think I am reserving a little bit of judgment to see if they do, like, what things change coming out, because I do feel that there's a little, like, too much of we have to have the movie kind of flow in this way. I do agree with you, though, Brendan, that especially this and Thor Ragnarok really show that it can go in kind of a less kind of formulaic kind of direction. Maybe not from a, like, kind of a macro point of view, but definitely within the movie, like, scene by scene, those scenes were really, really excellent. In that kind of way, I think there's a lot of good stuff that kind of comes out of it. Whether they kind of keep in that vein or if these are really one-offs, I'm not sure yet. Because I mean, there's so many Marvel movies coming out.
Well, I mean, the nice thing is that now they're at a point, they've got this machine so well oiled that they're putting out 3 movies a year. So they don't have to bank on this one movie to appeal to everybody, which I think was kind of a problem with those early movies.
Yeah.
And they can be more specialized in the stories that they're trying to tell, and they can give them to artistic directors who can tell their own stories. And if it fails for some reason, which so far it hasn't, they still are making $1 billion a movie. So they can, you know, you lose one that doesn't do as well, you still have 2 more that are going to make you $1 billion each.
Interesting.
By the way, if you'd like to sponsor the Not a Thing podcast, please
Marvel, Kevin Feige,
please let us know. Tweet at us, Facebook us, all of that kind of stuff. We are still happy to look for sponsors. We're happy to look for guests. If you'd like to be on the show or participate in any way, we're on Twitter at Not a Thing Pod or Not a Thing Cast, and then on our website at notathingpodcast.com, where we will post our show notes every week. Thank you very much for being with us and listening as we go. And then Brendan and Jürgen, are we still podcasting?
I believe we aren't you recording?
Oh, for just a little bit more, yes. thanks, you guys, for kicking off the show this week, and I will talk to you guys next week.
Thank you very much.
Till next time.